representing yourself?
I am. I am here representing myself as an individual. That was one of the issues that arose recently as of last Thursday. I thank the court for this opportunity to appear before you all. It is unexpected. I thought this would be an appellate presentation. I had no idea I would be appearing before the Supreme Court. I'll not belabor the underlying background of this matter. I believe that the brief fully outlines the background to this. What it is a problem of jurisdiction. And my brief basically said that there are three prongs where the court did not have jurisdiction to enter the order that they did. And one of the problems that I'm having with the court is its inability to work in a way that makes it understandable for not only me as a pro se from a foreign jurisdiction in New Jersey, but even for other counsel that are appearing in the matter. The underlying matters are estate matters that have been going on since 2012. This is a really very long time for a very simple estate to be concluded. So the only thing I can say is that I believe that I've shown that the court had no jurisdiction. One of the matters that is currently pending, since this is an interlocutory matter before the court, is that there was a motion for recusal that was never heard. So when this matter does return from this court, that motion will have to be determined, and it will cause the vacation of any orders that were entered after that motion was made and never resolved. So that's really my presentation. I hope the court will find that the court had no jurisdiction to enter the order removing me as a trustee.
Why do you feel the court had no jurisdiction? Simply because a motion was pending?
There were three matters. Initially, there was this is a testamentary trust case that evolved from an estate case, and in the resolution of the estate case, the court said that it would only permit distributions provided no appeal was taken. An appeal was taken, in fact, two appeals were taken, and neither one of those appeals had been determined when the court made its order removing me as the trustee. The second matter would be I then filed an appeal actually in that pending case, the one that's before you now, when it appeared that the court had removed me as a trustee by entering an order appointing the co-trustee to act independently. And there was a motion pending for my removal that was under advisement. So it appeared that I had been removed as the trustee. So I filed an appeal of that matter. So once again, the Court of Appeals had jurisdiction of that issue. The trial court continued to issue orders on that issue when it had no jurisdiction.
Isn't it true that the two appeals that were taken from the estate case were resolved before that February 10, 2017 order?
They were resolved before the Court of Appeals. They were not resolved before the Supreme Court. There was an applicant petition made to the Supreme Court, and that resolution was done on February 14th, which would have been after the court had made its determination. But the third reason for lack of jurisdiction would be the failure to rule on the motion to recuse. I pointed out in the brief that if there is a motion to recuse pending, the court does not have jurisdiction until it makes a determination on that motion, and because if they should find out afterwards that they should have recused themselves, any orders that they had made would then have to be vacated.
And what rule or statute are you relying on for that, for your assertion that the failure to rule on the motion to recuse?
Unfortunately, I was in a rush to get here. I do not have a copy of my brief before me. I am not relying on a statute. I'm relying on case law. I cannot quote it here before you, but it is included in my brief. I believe it's Kennedy versus Kennedy, but I could not say that I'm absolutely assured that is the case that I rely on. So that would be, my presentation would be that I do not believe the court had jurisdiction at the time that it issued the order removing me as a trustee.
Let's assume for the moment that we disagree on that your jurisdictional arguments. Where does that put us?
It puts us with determining whether or not the basis for my removal, which the judge said that I failed to comply with orders. Once again, I was attempting to comply with all orders that were in effect and valid. In fact, one of the matters that occurred after the appeal was filed was the establishment of a testamentary trust account with a bank. And at that point in time, letters of trusteeship were then issued by the court. So until that actually happened, there was no ability to say that I was not complying with orders of the court because I technically had no letters of appointment in order to take any steps, which had the court had said that it was relying on orders before that in saying that I had failed to comply with orders previous to that, when in fact the court had not at that time issued letters of trusteeship that gave me the ability to do anything as a trustee.
Had you told the court you weren't going to cooperate with co-trustee?
Have I told the court?
Before that February order removal, did you tell the court on several occasions that you weren't going to comply and cooperate with the co-trustee?
I don't know if I would characterize it as failure to cooperate with the co-trustee. The co-trustee has made demands which I do not believe are supported. I have attempted to do everything that is necessary that I feel as a trustee are required for that position.
Does the record reflect why you have an issue with the initial distribution?
I believe it does. My brief outlined the fact that I do not believe that at this point in time the corpus of the testamentary trust is complete. It is based on the residuals from the estate of Josephine P. Warner, and we have shown, and there are motions pending in the court below, that there are assets that were misappropriated from the decedent's
Is there a dispute as to whether or not the corpus is adequate for the initial distributions, which, as I recall, are discrete amounts?
There has been a suggestion as to what that amount should be. The fact that that amount, I believe, is incorrect is my reason for saying that at this point in time, the court cannot make a preliminary distribution.
Have grandchildren's distributions been given?
They have not.
Okay. Is that a set amount?
That is a set amount.
Is there sufficient funds to make those distributions?
There is.
Okay, and why have those not been made?
Because that issue still is...
What issue?
One of the issue of what distributions are made under the testamentary trust.
Well, doesn't it say each grandchild gets $20,000?
The order of the court or the testamentary trust?
I'm asking you.
Okay, I would be saying that the testamentary trust is relying on the provisions of the inter vivos trust. There is a language that is in both the wills of both decedents and in the inter vivos trust that pointed out that all parties were acknowledged that the trust could be revoked, and at that point in time the terms of that trust would be revoked. So the argument made that the grandchildren are entitled to a distribution is still a question that's before the court, because the district court determined that the trust was a nullity, and as a result, the provisions made for the grandchildren are no longer valid because the the distribution from the estate will probably be through intestacy.
So the will's out. Trust is out.
The inter vivos trust is out, yes. I believe it is an error that the trial court has determined that the provisions of the testamentary trust are the same as the inter vivos trust.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dorward, good morning to you.
Good morning, Justices. May it please the court, my name is Charles Dorward. I'm here representing the interests of Barbara Jo Warner, the co-trustee and beneficiary of the decedent, Josephine P. Warner, and also her children, the grandchildren of Josephine. I do believe initially that I have to advise the court that I don't think the court has jurisdiction, primarily based on that show cause order that the court issued. I don't think Mr. Warner responded to it properly. He says he does represent himself and not the trustee, even though his brief repeatedly says he represents himself and he's representing himself as the trustee. He comes here today saying he only represents himself, and he didn't comply with the order, which was to post the supersedious bond. He didn't do that within the 30-day requirement, and the statute does say it shall be posted. He didn't do that.
So. Is that jurisdictional?
Pardon?
Is that a jurisdictional requirement?
I believe so, based on the statute and based on the court order to show cause, saying that that there would be no jurisdiction if that weren't posted and complied with.
Don't you have to show some prejudice as a result?
I'm sorry, I can't hear real well.
Okay. Don't you have to show some prejudice as a result of the failure to comply with posting of the supersedious bond?
Well, I'm not familiar with that, so I'm not sure. But I do believe that, you know, if we move on to the main issue, I do believe the main issue
here really... Before you go on to the main issue, if we have no jurisdiction, where does that leave everything?
It leaves it back to the county court to go ahead and proceed, and Philip Warner would be the co-trustee. And again, I do believe that the issue here is that Joseph Warner was properly removed. I mean, there was a hearing. The first time that the court brought forth the issue of payment distribution was in February of 2014. Saying that the co-trustee should do this. In April of 2015, the court issued an order saying that the two trustees should get together and agree where they would put the funds so that the court could distribute the funds from the court bank account to them as trustees of the trust. Mr. Warner wouldn't agree to anything. We couldn't get it accomplished, so the court said if that didn't happen, he was going to send a check to my office, which he did. I had a $600,000 check sitting in my office. From that point forward in 2015, I attempted to get Mr. Warner and his brother Philip Warner and Mr. Lindsay, who represented Philip Warner, to agree to setting up a trust account, an account where we could get the funds cashed and taken care of and distributed. A year passed and we could never get that accomplished. And we went back into court, maybe for the third time since, and the judge, or Mr. Warner, asked the judge about that check. I said, it's right here, Judge, it's no good anymore. It was invalid after 180 days. In Mr. Warner's brief, he references the fact that he sent me a letter saying, send me the check, I'll sign it, and we need to deposit it. And that was in the last 6 months or so, or a year ago. Well, the check was already no good 2 years ago. So he's... Unfortunately, it's been 6 years of dealing with this. I do believe that the issue again is, was he removed correctly and properly? And I believe that he was. There were no pending issues in front of the Court of Appeals. He filed an appeal of an order of the court in county court that said to... It was a hearing for everybody to show and find out what could we do about this trust account. He couldn't be there. He was out of the country. The judge knew that was going to happen, but he wanted Barbara Jo Warner and me and Mr. Lindsay to show up. So what he did, and it's in the record, that he ordered Barbara Jo Warner to go attempt to set up a trust account in the name of Josephine P. Warner Testamentary Trust with the two of them as trustees. and that she couldn't do anything other than deposit the money if she could prove that the account was set up. Well, she couldn't get that accomplished. But his, Mr. Warner's, position at that point was that he was removed, so he filed the appeal, saying that he was improperly removed. That was on September 8th of last year. I filed a motion to quash that because it wasn't a final appealable order. Just so happened on the same day that I filed my motion to quash, he happened to file a motion to withdraw his appeal. And as I indicated in my objection to the response to the show cause, I didn't have a copy of that motion that he filed. The first indication I had that maybe something had happened was that I got an order from the court saying my motion was denied as moot. So I called the court and said, well, why is it denied? Well, he dismissed. I said, well, I didn't get a copy of that. Just like I didn't get a copy of his motion to, or his effort to respond to your order to show cause. I didn't get that until I called the court and asked if anything had happened, and then I checked justice and found that. He's done that throughout the process. I've complained about that to the court, and the court has admonished him. He has sent things directly to my client, Barbara Jo Warner, over the years. We've asked the court to direct him not to do that. He continues to do it. He has no respect for the judge. He has no respect for the court. He writes letters directly to the judge and doesn't send me copies. Again, I have to dig to find those. So that's what we're up against. And again, going back to the order that he appealed, he withdrew that motion on September 26th. So he wants to stand here and say there's a pending matter that should keep Judge Wester from setting a hearing in February of 2017. But he dismissed his motion, or he withdrew his motion. It was actually dismissed by the Court of Appeals on December 26th. The judge set this hearing that he's talking about on February 10th, 2017.
What's driving this case?
Pardon?
What's driving this case?
What's driving what?
What's driving this case? What's driving the case being so prolonged? Is there a suspicion that there are hidden assets?
There are assets. I mean, there's $600,000 in the trust account.
Or is there, there's tension in the family? Things of that nature?
From day one, I wasn't involved when Dad had died, and the daughter, my client, attempted to be appointed as a PR under his will. I wasn't involved initially, and immediately Joseph and Philip Warner objected to her being appointed. They agreed that an outside person should be appointed. The court appointed an attorney. They agreed that they felt she couldn't handle it for whatever reason. But Mom was incapacitated at the time. She needed a conservator, but Joseph and Philip agreed that she could be the conservator. But there was no money in there for Mom because Dad was taking care of everything. And then you had all the problems with the fact that he revoked the trust. He left all the accounts in their names as trustees of the trust, and then the bank wouldn't cooperate to take care of things for Mom. So I filed a motion with the county court saying, as for on the conservator, I said, please distribute some money to the conservatorship so that we have money for Mom to live. And she was spending maybe $6,000 a month. The court ordered $50,000 to be transferred to the conservatorship. And shortly after that, the conservator, the daughter, was able to bring in an insurance policy that actually paid $50,000, so she had enough money to take care of Mom. About the time that all that was happening, Mom died. So that was November of 2012, or October of 2012, and Dad died in February of 2012. During all this time, and then after that, we asked that the daughter be appointed as the PR for Mom, because that's what her will said. Joseph and Philip objected immediately, and you asked what's the underlying cause. From the beginning, they didn't agree with the terms of the trust, they didn't agree with the will, they didn't want Barbara Jo Warner to have anything or the grandchildren to have anything. That's their motivation from my perspective. The trust said, if we both die, $20,000 to each of the grandchildren. So there's $80,000. The rest of it to the three children equally. So if you look at what's in the trust account now, that's about $600,000. So $520,000 divided between the three children is what it is. $80,000 to the grandchildren. They fought the terms of the will. Mom's will said, if my trust happens to be invalid at the time of my death, I still want the terms of the trust to apply. Judge Wester ruled that yes, that's the case. That's why he ultimately set up the testamentary trust. I believe that Mr. Warner appealed that issue and he lost that issue. So the courts have said the trust applies, the terms apply. So that's the main issue, is that do the grandchildren get the money? Now the issue is they just don't want Barbara to get anything. I mean, part of what they're doing and part of his whole 52-page brief is giving you the history of everything, or he's trying to. And I can summarize in a couple minutes, but if I need to stop, I'll stop.
Before you sit down, is there anything in our record that shows that a supersedious bond has been set and posted?
No, there is no supersedious bond.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Jeremy D. Foster. I am recused in this matter. Justice Miller Lerman will preside and give everybody a second to get in and out of the courtroom, please, and then you may proceed.